This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Been There, Done That with Gordon, Phil and Chris.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone.
How good is it?
Well, it's not that warm. Good outside. It's pretty grey and it's only 11 degrees, which makes it's a bit rough, you know.
Well, it's double digits.
But it is winter. Let's face it. What else can you expect at this time of the year?
Thanks very much to Tim for the news and to Scotty for the morning show. Lucky Scotty's off to do his Jamie Oliver cooking class.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, can we expect some decent food when we get here next week, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, but he's probably have stories to tell.
Oh, well, I'm sure he will. Yes.
We'll hear all about his, was it Pucker Tucker?
Oh.
Or something.
Yeah, but Jamie's not going to be doing the actual teaching. So there we are.
So there's Jamie Oliver cooking course and there's Jamie Oliver cooking course.
Well, yes. Well,
anyhow, he's learning to be a good cook.
And welcome to Joy's history program. I know we sometimes say that it's more mirth than history, and some of this trivia stuff is good only for trivia parties. Mm-hmm. However,
but we're living history anyhow.
We're living it. Isn't it interesting that we never recognise historical events as they're happening? It's only afterwards that they've gathered all the gravitas and importance.
Yeah, well, people don't realise when things are happening, how important they are and what effect they're going to have for the rest of the community or the rest of history.
How many of those reality TV shows think they're making history and tell you again and again during
Chris, Philip, I beg your pardon, I don't think any of them would ever make history.
But, oh, no, but they think they are.
Yeah, but
for the first time in history, we've got a...
It was interesting, that little promo from Jane Lynch at the very beginning.
Yeah.
It's her birthday tomorrow, actually.
It is, yes.
She's born on the 14th of July. And so we play that. And she, of course, was one of the mainstays of that wonderful, wonderful, wonderful series of Glee, which was absolutely... I loved it. I just thought it was...
I never saw one frame of any of Glee. So you've got to tell me about Glee and how important it was, whether it was a flash in the pan or whether it will have historical significance in later life.
Well, Philip, I think it went for about four years, didn't it?
I think so. Don't quote us on that.
No, don't quote us on that. But it was. I know it went for quite a few numbers of series.
It seemed like 4 years.
Yeah, and they had gay characters. They had a lesbian character in this school, and the talent and the people that were in it, it was just absolutely fantastic.
Conceptually, they dealt with things like internalised homophobia.
Yes,
where the bully turned out to be gay.
That's right. Yeah.
And a lot of things which I guess these days you would hope a show would address, but given that it was on American broadcast television, you don't often get the nitty-gritty.
No.
So it was reality TV, but specifically focused?
Oh, no, it was a drama.
It was a drama. There was all this underpinning stuff that was going on between Jane Lynch and the teacher, the man that did all the musical part of the show, you know. There was this cross thing going on between her character and his, and she was a real bitch, you know. She was going to have her way or come hell or high water. And it was very, very clever, very clever. And she had some great lines. She was almost at as good a line as what's name did
the Golden Girls.
Golden Girls, yes.
Yes,
almost as good a lines as that, you know. They were really, really good, yeah.
But it was a show based on glee clubs and show competitions in high school.
Right.
And really showcased 80s music.
So
a lot of good music was brought back.
They would do things from Beyonce and from everybody. They would get a song and they would do a whole complete routine to it. Just amazing stuff. Talented, very, very talented people.
And
most of them came from talent schools.
Yeah, of course. So the characters drifted in and out of the cast, as it were?
No, they had the set cast. They were basically a set cast, and they would have perhaps one show they would have somebody in that was quite famous. And,
wow.
And they'd do it. It was a great series. If ever you get hold of a copy of one of them, just look at it.
And you were saying there was a couple of good examples of gay folk.
Oh, yeah,
well,
Kirk was gay and he fell in love with a boy from the opposite school who was in charge of their glee club sort of thing. So, and Kirk's father always stood up for him.
Yeah, well, they showed it was okay to be gay, basically.
Yeah, that's basically, didn't they? Yeah. It was a really good show. Unfortunately, stopped now, but there are still a lot of more gay shows coming out of American television.
So under pressure. Oh, so says Danny Minogue here on Joy.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil, and I've got a croaky voice, and Gordon's got a croaky voice.
We're all croaking around.
We must have been swallowing frogs or tadpoles or something. Phil's the only healthy one.
Well, that's because I got my flu jab.
Well, I got a flu jab as well.
But this is just a cold. It's not a flu jab.
That's right. It's not a flu.
No.
Besides which, you didn't have to go out into the rain, did you?
Well, the dog wouldn't go out in the rain, so we spent yesterday inside trying to figure out what to do instead of walking.
I didn't go outside yesterday either. God, it was a bloody awful day. Thank you very much.
Listen, this time next week, one of us will be all croaky and the other two will be saying, I told you so.
Anyhow,
on the 14th of July in 1770, the first European sighting of a kangaroo is recognised.
Oh.
It's 1770.
And it wasn't by a cartoon cat.
No, it wasn't a cartoon cat, no.
Oh, you're referring to
Sylvester.
Sylvester Saffron Succotash.
That's the biggest nuff I've ever seen.
See, I haven't seen that since I was a little tucker, and I still remember the context of that particular joke.
I can remember it. Yeah, it was so
still on
vivid.
Channel 90 on Go, which is one of the Channel 9 family.
Yes.
And Looney Tunes are still there.
Are they?
It will never die.
Oh, so if I'm at home and I need cheering up,
you can watch a Looney Tune.
Oh, good.
Instead of working here at Joy.
Well, I wonder what
Looney's
on earth.
Here.
Yeah. Well, just as Sylvester Cat didn't realise that it wasn't a large, monstrous mouse.
Well, he could have written the label on the side of the box, which clearly said kangaroo.
Oh, right. Okay.
But he's a cat, so I guess we've got to let him off.
Now, of course, we're not quite sure which one of the Australian marsupial kangaroo-type creatures there he saw, but presumably it was the common grey or the red kangaroos. But, yeah, but there's wallabies, which are much smaller little things.
Yes.
Little euros, which are even smaller, and they're gorgeous little things.
That's right.
Tree kangaroos, wallaroos, pademelons, rat kangaroos, and quokkas from the west.
The west, yes. There's a very, as you say, various qualities of kangaroo, but this was a grey kangaroo, apparently. It was shot by one of Captain Cook's men while they were fixing up the Endeavour, which had run aground in Queensland.
Oh, right. And, Cooktown.
Yeah, and the fella saw this animal thing and shot it, and they skinned it and took the skin back to...
They were probably after some tucker as well, because I don't think these 7-Elevens were operating in Cooktown at those days.
Long ago, they were 6 to 8.
But the thing was, of course, that they wouldn't have known that they could eat that meat. They wouldn't have known unless the Aboriginals had told them they could cook it and eat it if they were looking for food, because kangaroo has got some very, very high protein food.
Oh, it is beautiful. Yeah. I mean, kangaroo tail soup is brilliant. Better than oxtail soup.
Yeah.
Well, they would have had less trouble eating kangaroo than we do today. Because I look at kangaroo and I think of Skippy, and I just can't do it.
Oh, right, okay.
He could fly a helicopter. I can't eat him. No. He saved people.
And then, of course, the platypus was another one that was done on the 15th of July. The first platypus was displayed in America, in the United States.
Now, that would have been a novelty show, wouldn't it?
Well, they didn't realise that such an animal existed. And, of course, when it was once again skinned and shown in Great Britain, they thought it was a hoax.
How could you have a duck bill?
A duck bill on a piece of leather, furry leather, you know.
And then there's a cloaca there where an egg comes out.
That's right.
This creature ain't meant to be.
No,
it's a complete mix-up of everything.
How do you turn a duck into a blues singer and soul singer?
I don't know. You tell us.
Put him in the oven and wait till his bill withers.
They Craig.
Bill Withers, yes, yes, yes. It wasn't Googie Withers.
Well, I couldn't get that from Platypus, I'd sort of introduced
no,
the
day. No, no. Well, I'll add a little bit. Our family, we had cats who were always well-fed and they were a little bit on the chubby side. And one of them, our favourite cat, had a birthday coming up and I found this particular card. And this is when I was 12 or 14 or something. And it showed a cartoon picture of a cat, a fat cat, sitting there with a big smile on its face. And sitting at its feet were all these feathers, obviously from a duck or something like that.
Bird.
And there was bones and all sorts of things. And the inscription was underneath, "There's a duck-filled fatty puss." So, of course,
that's a very clever play on words.
Yeah, it is indeed. Yeah.
Well, while we're doing greeting cards, just very quickly, this is a famous Gary Larson cartoon. It's these two pilots, full uniforms, headphones, everything, and they're sitting on this giant baby at the end of a runway. And one pilot says to the other, "Let's get this baby off the ground."
Yes, yes, okay then. Also on the 14th of July, Australia's first Governor-General is appointed. And
Lord Hope.
Lord Hope, indeed.
Not
Lord.
Bob.
No, Lord Hopeton. He was Sir something rather Hope, but he was actually Lord Hopeton.
Oh, the title
was Lord
goes
Hopeton.
With the Lord, but his name was John Adrian Louis Hope.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And he was Lord Hopeton.
And he was sort of the intermediary between the regent, the queen, the king in Pommyland, and us. And that's why he's a governor general.
Yes, he is the representative of the ruling royal personage.
Mm.
At the moment it's the queen, and then it's going to be Charles, and it'll be Harry, whatever it
happens. Of course, the role of the governor general is to appoint or dismiss...
The Prime Minister.
Prime Minister. And the other ministers and judges, of course, as well. So in recent history, we had Sir John Kerr, who wasn't terribly crash hot, and he dismissed Gough Whitlam from Prime Ministerial position.
I always liked the description that somebody made of Sir John Kerr. He looked like a marinated blood plum with a yogurt topping because he had white hair and a very red face.
Plums that's unkind.
Plums can't talk.
They can't. But also they have to install the Prime Minister that's chosen by the ruling party, of course.
Mm.
And it was on this day in 1945 that Ben Chifley was elected as the Prime Minister of Australia.
Well, of course, John Hope himself, the first Governor-General, he appointed Edmund Barton.
Mm, Edmund Barton as the first Prime Minister of Australia.
So
the Commonwealth of Australia, because that was after 1901 when we had the Commonwealth started.
It's very hard to visualise the Governor-General. General, though, down on his knees in his blue overalls, plugging in the Prime Minister and saying, "There you go, he's installed."
Where are the operating instructions?
Don't read the manual.
Oh, no.
We won't.
Where's
go
the
there?
Reset button?
That's right. I'm hoping for a delete button at the moment, but that's another story.
You're not being political or anything like that?
No.
Oh.
Nor correct.
What? Nor correct.
Okay, you're losing yourself, and so is Will Young here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Joy.org.au for the world.
Hey, bonjour.
Bonjour to you too. Bonjour, monsieur. Yeah.
Oui.
Yeah, oui, tomorrow. Yeah.
Indeed. Tomorrow is 14th of July.
G'day.
Well,
and I never say that.
I know you never say that, but in fact, we could well be speaking French here in Australia regular thing.
It was touch and go because the French were cruising around the east coast here, and they ran into Flinders at Encounter Bay
in South Australia.
In South Australia, and also they went up the coast and
Western Australia.
No, in the east coast, and they saw that they had already started a sort of a settlement part there, because that's why they stopped.
Just before we get too far away from Matthew Mitchum, he's returning to our TV screens shortly.
Oh, yes, I believe
on a dancing network. I won't name the show.
Oh. He's a good mover.
Well, he's good at a lot of things, apparently.
He could probably do a couple of backflips on the dance floor.
Yeah.
He's a trampoline artist, after all.
He could go to Wimbledon and dive.
Yes, that's right.
Wouldn't be the first one, would he?
Play soccer and dive. Anyhow, we're talking about French Revolution.
Yeah, no, well, tomorrow in fact, Bastille Day is the French National Day, and it was sort of referring back to the time when, in the French Revolution, the Bastille, the bastion, the fortress
It was a terrible jail.
It was a terrible jail. It was stormed by the peasants were revolting, as you were saying. And then the following day, the peasants actually realised that they had overcome the tyrants who were in rule. And they said, right, this is the celebration of the coming together of the French population.
Yeah, that sort of still carries on through the French psyche as well, because the French have been known to sort of get out on the streets and burn cars and go very, very berserk if they don't like something that the government is going to do.
They do get upset, don't they?
They do tend to get a little upset.
Uni students, when you raise their fees.
Yes, yes.
They'll say, well, I'll just smoke more marijuana and not study.
Yeah, that's right. Over in France, they would have been out on the streets. The people in France do stand up and they confront their governments about something that they don't like, where here in Australia we don't do anything like that.
Well, not so far. We haven't been provoked enough.
Yes. Yeah.
No, well, of course, our Eureka Stockade was in fact
mini revolution, yeah.
Yes, but we use other processes for getting our way. I don't think the French had actually thought of voting or giving people the vote or actually setting up a process where the vote meant anything.
Oh, well, they do now, of course. They do have the voting system.
Oh, they do now.
They have a very good voting system, but they still do get out on the streets if there's something that they don't like.
Mm.
You know, like when they went into the common market and they were going to sort of stop them from growing some of their fruit and vegetables, they just storm the barricades again, you know, and they just don't put up with it. They just go for it, you know. And it's built into their psyche from
The people's
from the French
voice.
Revolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People's have a voice. You've got to admire
them for it, because they get done what they want, not what the politicians want. It's really, really, really works, yeah. I've been in France during the 14th of July celebrations. Yeah,
a lot of fun.
They really go to town.
Well, no, they don't actually. Those people in Paris, they're in town already.
Oh, they have a huge march up the Champs-Élysées. They come down the Champs-Élysées. They come down from the l'Arc de Triomphe down to the bottom of the Place de la Concorde.
Now, which arc was that? Triumph was that put up for?
That was from Napoleonic Wars, when Napoleon won the... basically controlled all of Europe, and they put up their triumphal arch.
No relation to Joan?
No, Joan of Arc, no.
No,
they don't have that anymore.
No, they don't have that anymore. No. Yeah. But they marched down the Champs from the Arc de Triomphe down to the Place de la Concorde, where the President and the Prime Minister and all the rest of the invited guests sit.
Detect an accent coming into your voice there.
Oh, just a small bit.
With all these umbrellas and
I just know how to say them.
Yeah, I don't.
But I was in...
I can say Concorde.
Oh, yeah. I was in Nice on the...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was very nice, but not in...
I was in a neighbouring town, I won't name it.
Nephew.
I didn't name it. That wasn't me.
And and we were there, and I was having a lovely time and watching the parade and all the rest of it. And it turned out that while they were having the parade, somebody was drilling into a bank underground and took everything out of the bank on the National Day. Yeah.
Oh, well, they were well diverted that time.
Yes,
well, that's just sharing the wealth.
Yes, I suppose so.
Taking it from that guy who wouldn't hand it around.
The whole place was going berserk, you know, when they found out about it, because the banks were shut for 2 days because they had a Monday off or something like that.
Well, they had that last Easter, didn't they, in London?
Yeah, that's right.
That broke into the vault.
Yeah.
So don't take holidays.
Don't take holidays. Just keep everything open all day, every day. Yep. And I still think that the greatest national anthem is La Marseillaise.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's just wonderful. It's just so stirring and gets you going.
And their three-word acronym, well, not acronym, it's mission statement.
Liberté, égalité and fraternité.
Yes, brotherhood, liberty and equality.
Equality.
Mm. Yeah.
Truth, justice and the American way.
I don't think that was the same Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if their national anthem was named like ours. It'd be Advance France Fair.
Our three-word slogan is Stop the Boats.
Ooh. No, just stop talking about the boats. We didn't actually stop them.
Yeah, anyhow.
Oh, no. So it's good. And young Jamie Oliver is going to be teaching our Scotty some French cooking, I'm sure.
Well, there'll be lots of butter, lots of cream. Oh. I've been watching this, the Tour de France.
Yes,
and Gabriel Gatté always comes on with a cooking segment, little cooking segment. And this morning he was doing scallops.
Oh,
the mouth is watering.
Coquille Saint-Jacques,
yeah.
Oh, that's right. See, they put their name on everything.
And he gets more French the longer he spends in Australia.
And it's just beautiful. And the day before he had crepes with framboise. That's strawberries. Strawberry crepes.
Yeah. And there's little creperies getting around now in the streets selling. So, you know, that's coming. I haven't seen any frog's eggs or snails yet, but you can find them in some of the...
I think they have to take them out before they open the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
It's the health department say, well, I don't want those frog legs in there.
With the frogs attached. Croak, croak. So there's lots of French influences, and we probably don't realise it.
Well, there's Doncaster Strait, isn't there?
Between the Kangaroo Island
and the mainland
in South Australia.
And there's,
if you just look at the road, the map of Australia, on the coast there are lots of things with French names. Yep, yeah.
Named by the French when they were here, but the British just beat them to it. That's why we're British.
Well, they didn't quite beat the French to it. They had a mutual agreement. Okay, you go your way, we'll go ours. Yeah, but and then as soon as their backs were turned, bang, in went the flag.
We were already there. The British were already there.
Well, we could have been on the floor.
Could we?
Screaming and, we don't want you as our masters.
Oh, well, anyhow, it's the way of the world, isn't it?
Yeah. You're on Joy 94.9. Chris Gordon and Phil. And been there, done that.
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
You're with Phil, Gordon and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us today. We're enjoying ourselves and we hope you're having fun at home.
Just point out, we seem to have a slight problem with our email. So if you've sent us a message, we're sorry, but we can't see it.
We can't read it. No, it's coming through.
So assuming they're all complimentary... Yes. Thank you for sending
them. Thank you for sending them, yes. But we just tried to send a test one and nothing had failed. So we're not, we haven't got much on here at the moment. But 15th of July in 1099 was a nice old date, wasn't it?
It was a gorgeous
day. That was the Christian soldiers entered Jerusalem after the siege during the First Crusade and murder almost every inhabitant of the city.
Charming. Thank you to all those lovely Christians.
Good Christian attitude, wasn't it?
Well,
but they were Muslims, of course, that were in Jerusalem at the time.
Well, Jerusalem and that's part of Asia, really, not in Europe. And their compatriots right next door were the Turks. And the Turks were Muslim. Yeah, and
it's the Middle East, isn't it?
Yeah,
Middle East,
that's right.
Like that, yeah.
And the Christians thought that, they shouldn't be in the holy city of Jerusalem, so let's get rid of everybody. So they went in, and Muslims, Jew, and even Eastern Christians were murdered. And it was not a particularly... wonderful thing to have as a reputation.
No, 1099. But the different part about that was that the Muslims then came in years later, or I don't know how many years later, and took Jerusalem back, of course.
Did they now?
From the Christians, you see. They, that's why you had the First Crusade, the Second Crusade, Third Crusade, because it just kept fighting backwards and forwards as to who was going to control Jerusalem.
I've won.
But
no, you haven't.
When the Muslims went back in, they didn't murder anybody. They just let everybody live. They didn't kill anybody. They just took control of the city. After they'd taken control of the city, they didn't do like the Christians did and walked in and killed everybody. They just let them all go about their own ordinary business.
So religion is a really good thing, isn't it?
Isn't it a great thing? Mm. Yeah.
You can kill somebody in the name of your God.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the ultimate alibi, isn't it?
It's a very good
alibi. Didn't do it, God said.
Yeah, just following orders.
Yeah, no.
No, that doesn't work.
A lot of people do it that way too. They use that as an excuse.
Yep.
But on the 18th of July, 1873, the explorer William Goss cites and names a particular thing that he bumped into.
I don't think he actually bumped into it.
Well, you couldn't bump into it.
he saw it from a distance, I think, Chris, because it was standing up like the proverbial toilet on the Nullarbor.
Well, the reason that he actually saw it was because he was an accidental tourist. He wasn't meant to be in that particular area of Australia.
He was looking for water because he'd gone from Alice Springs and he was going somewhere else and he started to run out of water, so he went a little bit south of Alice Springs and he bumped into a dirty great big rock.
It is a dirty great big rock, and the big rock we're talking about was named by him as Ayres Rock after
Sir Francis Henry Eyre, who was the General Secretary for the State of Adelaide.
Yeah, okay then. Yeah. So for a lot of people, it is known as Ayres Rock, but of more recent times, there's been a correction of that, and it's now known by the two names Ayres Rock, Uluru.
Well, Uluru is the real name for it.
It is the Aboriginal name
for it. Because the Aboriginals have been calling it Uluru for years.
Yeah.
For thousands of years they've been calling it Uluru.
Yeah. And in fact, I think hardly anybody these days really calls it.
I always call it Uluru. I don't even think of Ayers Rock when I'm talking about it. You know, it's always just Uluru. They found that they had to do a lot of promotion of it when it passed into the hands of the local Aboriginals because the tourist trade dropped off a lot.
Well,
and they then had to sort of work to make the tourists go back there again.
Yeah, I mean, tourists used to go all over the rock, is the parts that they could walk to, because it's not a particularly easy thing to think. And they were doing all sorts of wickednesses up on the rock and desecrating this site, this monument that the Aboriginals held as part of their culture.
Well, it's a sacred site to the Aboriginals.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like anybody sort
and
of...
And it survived millions of years of evolution and erosion and all that sort of stuff,
but I've
only
always,
to find tourists coming and upsetting it.
I've always wondered, how big is it underground?
Well, you never
how far does it go under as well?
Or is it goes 345 metres above the plane.
So how deep is it below?
Well, see, it may not be like an iceberg. It might be all you've got. It might be just sitting there on the sand.
No. They've actually worked out, because if you look at the stratas of layered sediment, they're actually on their end. It's like a loaf of sliced bread. In fact, if it was in its correct orientation, it would be the other way. It would be end on, and all those layers would be like a Sara Lee cake, layer upon layer upon layer.
Well, then maybe it's an ancient meteor and it landed on its side.
No, they've actually worked. Oh, thank you for
all of that would have been underwater, so there would have been a big splash.
Well, you're right about it being underwater. It's sedimentary marine deposits. And,
well, there used to be ocean in there anyhow.
It rose.
It was part of probably when it was part of Gondwana land.
Yeah, indeed. So, but I think it's great now that the Aboriginal cultures are actually administering the area and giving due respect to their culture.
Right. That's right. And it's deservedly so, you know. You wouldn't go into St. Paul's Cathedral and start writing your name all over the walls, would you?
No, but I hope...
Can you do that?
Whoops.
I don't think so.
No. Well, I've never thought of it.
But I hope that they don't turn the touristy trade thing into a forced...
It's quite pleasant to go out there now. Part of my family have been out there just recently. They had a French exchange student and they took her out to see Uluru. And,
but I think actually putting on performances for the tourist...
What did they get for her? They said they took her out there to exchange a student. What did they get for her?
No, she wasn't exchanged. She was exchanged before she came. Went out there.
Ah, so they pre-swapped.
Pre-swapped.
But I think sometimes local populations put all this fancy war paint on for, and it's not really their culture. I'm not saying war paint isn't, or those skin decorations aren't, but sometimes the process is forced so that there is something there for the tourists to look at. Smoking ceremonies and clapsticks and things like this.
So you're saying you don't want them to get what Hawaii's got with their Polynesian Cultural Centre?
Oh, really?
Which is like a mini Disneyland run by the Mormons.
Exactly.
Full
not.
Of stereotypes.
Yeah. So that's what you don't want out there. I've been there to Uluru myself, and it is incredibly amazing how big this rock is.
They should have rock concerts there.
I don't think the rock
sings. We have them at Hanging Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was cancelled.
And in Hong Kong, they have wok concerts.
they go cooking in the kitchen.
That's right. Why not?
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Enough of this. Now, look, people who actually respected cultures and also political correctness were featured in Star Trek. Now, Mr.
The original and all the other generations.
Yeah. Now, set Star Trek for us, please. I know it's a TV series and films.
TV series originally made in the late 60s.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, during the great fever of the space race.
Yes.
And the show rated rather poorly.
Oh.
I could never understand that, because when I watched it, I thought it was terrific.
It was before its
future?
Time. It's set in the future, but for a show in the 60s, it actually had it like a mission statement and a belief that people could coexist peacefully and race and religion and everything could be erased.
They had a Vulcan, didn't they? Dr. Spock was from Vulcan or somewhere.
And they all lived happily ever after, but always seemed to have an enemy to shoot at, which I didn't quite get that.
Yeah.
But it had to be sold to the network as a Western in space.
Oh,
otherwise
okay,
it would never have aired. So that's probably why they had to have somebody to shoot
being
at.
Being created in the 60s, there would have been race riots in the US and everything like this. Was it sort of full of American culture?
I don't think you'd see it as American. You know it is, so you sort of masked
it. I thought it was rather international because they had a Scotchman and they had somebody else on and they had all different sort of nationalities in the cast.
Well, there was Negroes in there and in positions of power.
Yeah,
and,
we've got a birthday, don't we?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, one of the...
While we're talking about Star Wars is...
Yes.
Patrick Stewart.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Jack.
Yeah. Oh, French name.
It's his birthday today.
His French are taking over the show this week.
Whoa.
Who have we got next week?
I think it's French week, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, oui.
Yes,
he was born
on... Clean up to Studio 3.
July 13th, 1940. So there you are. Yes, he's getting on. But he's classically trained, and his vocal mannerisms, one of his strongest features, apart from his...
Chrome dome,
yes.
Yes, he had alopecia. It's a family trait, apparently.
Alopecia, Jean-Di alopecia. Yeah. Another French song.
Yeah. No, apparently it's a family hereditary trait, which is the alopecia, yeah. But he started off, he was reading some part of a play in his school when he was only quite young, and the teacher said, you do that so well, you should make that your business.
Yeah.
You know, so she put him on the right path about being an actor.
Mm. Well, someone suggested that in Star Trek times, surely they would have cured baldness by the 24th century, to which the actual producer said...
Well, the show's creator, Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah. He replied, in the 24th century, they wouldn't care.
Why not? They don't have cash.
No.
They don't have any of the sort of personal gimme stuff that we're living with.
No, they're just getting on with it.
But they are... on a never-ending mission through unknown space.
Yeah, I enjoyed the series, must admit.
In the original 1960s series, in the introduction, they mentioned that they're going where no man has gone before. Mm-hmm. By the 1990s, it was going where no one has gone before.
Oh, wow. So,
they had to correct a couple of little things.
Yeah, a little bit of PC-ness. That's very good then.
Well, I guess in the 1960s, who would have figured Rim would end up having rights?
Yes.
It's a bit like those gays. It's never going to happen.
Well, it certainly is, and it certainly will. Thanks very much for being with us. We've got to go.
It's another hour gone.
Yes, yeah. Joe and B are coming up after us. Mm. Hello. They're down there. They're all waiting, waving. So time for us to go, and thanks very much for being with us today. And we do have a message from Tom of Collingwood.
Good, the thing's working.
Excellent. Thank you for your membership, Tom.
He's just joined the wonderful Joy family. Indeed. That's the only one that's come through, but come through from a different angle.
Well, it's an internal message.
Yes, it's come through from a different angle.
There you go. But thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.